shoulder then. I'm younger than that now.
We're getting younger every day, folks. I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder, the show about taking chances, chasing dreams, pursuing passions, and creating the life that you want.
And proving it's never too late to do any of that. We've got some great guests coming up today.
We're also going to meet a 70-something yoga, Pilates, and dance instructor who believes that she has discovered the fountain of youth, and a man who embraced his diagnosis of an incurable disease and learned something that is now helping others who are in the midst of their own personal trials.
This is all today, folks. Also, the amazing transformation of a mind motivated by the loss of his grandmother to Alzheimer's. He became the reigning 4-time USA memory champion and believes what he's learned can protect us all from dementia. These guests and more all today on Growing Bolder. An important part of growing bolder is taking charge of your everyday life, and it's all about doing more of what brings you closer to your goals and less of what keeps you from achieving them.
Absolutely. You know, it's really all about change, and we do talk a lot about that on this program, but of course, change is rarely easy. So the question becomes, how do you create real, lasting change? And the answer is through habits. So how do we break bad habits and create good ones? And that is where Gretchen Rubin comes in.
How amazing can you get? She is big time, a graduate of Yale Law. She clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor before she became a writer, and she's written best-selling biographies on JFK and Winston Churchill. And then she reinvented herself as like one of the most influential self-help writers in the world, the author of the blockbuster New York Times bestsellers The Happiness Project and Happier at Home.
She is in demand as a keynote speaker. She's appeared on countless network television shows. She's published in national magazines. She has one of the top podcasts on iTunes, and she writes a very successful blog. And get this, she's been named one of the 100 most influential people in health and fitness. She's one of Inc.'s top 50 leadership and management experts and one of the 22 brilliant thinkers everyone should follow on Twitter by Business Insider. Her latest book, already a bestseller, is why we wanted to have her back on the program. It's called Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives, and it tackles the critical question, how can we make good habits and break the bad ones? Let's welcome Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen, how you doing?
I'm very happy to be talking to you again.
Well, you know what? If we listed everything that you do, we wouldn't have any time for the interview. It really is remarkable. We do love this topic, though, and we love the book because it really is a roadmap to growing bolder. We can inspire people to want to change, and we do that every week. But ultimately, as we said, it comes down to the challenge of creating sustainable change in our lives. You call habits the invisible architecture of everyday lives. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Research suggests that about 40% of what we do every day is shaped by our habits. So if we have habits that work for us, we're just far more likely to be happier, healthier, and more productive. If we have habits that don't work for us, it is just going to be a much bigger challenge to bring that about. So habits, they underlie everything that we do. They can make our life much easier or they can make it much tougher.
Now, a lot of people talk about habits, Gretchen, and it's nothing new, but unlike many of the experts out there on the subject, you start by saying that all of us are different and there is no one size fits all on how to be successful. We have to know ourselves.
Absolutely. I think that's the key part because, you know, you read all this expert advice and it's like, here's the magic answer. Do it first thing in the morning. Do it for 30 days. Give yourself a cheat day. Start small. And all those are strategies that work very well for some people some of the time, but they don't work all the time for everyone. And so I think we get frustrated when we keep trying to change a habit and not succeeding, but I think often it's because when we've tried to change that habit, we've gone about it in a way that isn't suited to us. Maybe it worked for Ben Franklin or Steve Jobs or our sister-in-law, but if it's not going to suit us, then it's going to be very hard for that habit to take hold.
We're talking with award-winning writer, best-selling author Gretchen Rubin about her new book, All About Habits. And Gretchen, you've identified 21 strategies to break bad habits and create new ones. One of them is called pairing. What is that?
Oh, pairing is a really fun one. So pairing is when you take something that you need to do or want to get yourself to do, and you pair it with something that you want to do. And it's not a reward. That's very important. It's not like, oh, I'm going for a run, and therefore I will get myself a scone, or I'm going for a run, and therefore I get to watch an episode of Downton Abbey. It's that two things only go together. So, for instance, one way a lot of people is if there's some kind of TV that they wish they had more time to watch, or maybe they spend too much time watching, they only do it on the treadmill. So if you want to watch House of Cards, you have to be on the treadmill. If you're sick in bed and you're too sick to exercise, are you off the hook? Can you watch House of Cards? No, you can only do it when you're on the treadmill. And with pairing, it just helps reinforce that habit because there's something driving you to it. As you mentioned, I have a podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, and a lot of people said, oh, I only listen to my favorite podcasts when I'm going for my daily walk. And so that helps propel me and keep me in that habit because I look forward to that, and I know that I can't have that thing that I want unless I'm doing this other activity that I also want to do, but maybe I need to give myself a little nudge.
It's pretty interesting. Something else that's very cool is the differentiation that you make between abstainers and moderators. And for many of us, the old adage, all things in moderation, you say may not be the right idea.
Absolutely. So abstainers and moderators has to do with the way that you most easily face a strong temptation. And so abstainers are people like me, and we do better when we have none, never. We find it pretty easy to give something up altogether, but we find it very hard to indulge in moderation. So I can have one chocolate. I can have no chocolate chip cookies, or I can have five chocolate chip cookies. I can't have one chocolate chip cookie. So those are abstainers, and we do better when we give something up altogether. Moderators, by contrast, get kind of panicky and rebellious if they're told they can never have something. So they do better if they have it sometimes or a little bit. Moderators are often the people who keep a bar of fine chocolate squirreled away in their desk or, you know, in a drawer someplace. And then once a day or every other day, they have one square of fine chocolate. See, as an abstainer, my whole day would be now, later, two squares, three squares. You know, I would be haunted by that candy bar until I'd eaten the whole thing. So it's easier for an abstainer to say, I'm not going to have any chocolate. But a moderator does better when they say, well, I can have a little bit if I want it. And you can see how this causes a lot of conflict among married people or in offices, because some people want to be abstaining and some people want to be moderating.
Yeah, I think I'm an abstainer, too.
Are you?
Well, you know, after a while, well, when you abstain from something, it's easy to ignore it.
Yes.
But it is difficult when it's always there.
You feel like it's easier to resist it by having none than by trying to tell yourself you can have it sometime?
Absolutely. You're known for your meticulous research. Now, folks, this is a very bright woman. She just doesn't decide she's going to write a book because she thinks it's something she can sell. You know, she spends years using her academic background, her connections, and doing research. And in your research, Gretchen, what do you find are the habits that, the most common habits that people either want to form or would like to break?
Well, you know, they definitely fall into clusters. Top one, eating and drinking healthfully. Another one, exercising regularly. Another one, anything related to stop procrastinating or making consistent progress. You know, I want to learn to play Italian. I want to write a blog. I want to write a novel. Why can't I keep up with that? Habits relating to resting, relaxing, enjoying. Things like I need to get more sleep. I need to put down my cell phone. I need to be more present in the moment. Things related to kind of organizing and staying on top of clutter and keeping things cleared and clean, which really weighs people down more than you would think. Habits relating to saving, spending, and earning, you know, so not spending too much, saving regularly, that kind of thing. And then also relating to deeper engagement with the world. So whether that's engaging more with friends, engaging more deeply with family, engaging more with God, like reading the Bible every day, or engaging with nature, going for a walk in a park once a day so that you have that feeling of being bound into the world with close, intimate ties, which is so crucial for happiness. So all these things can be made into habits that will allow these kind of behaviors to unfold much more automatically and consistently in our everyday lives.
So, Gretchen, let's talk for just a minute on the difference between just doing something and it being a habit. You said it's not one of those deals where if you do it for 20 days, there you go.
Right.
And so many of us start with the best intentions and fail.
Well, that's an incredibly important point, because mere repetition is not enough to make something a habit, though I think a lot of people assume that that's the case. The key aspect of a habit is the lack of decision-making. And something is a habit if it's a behavior on autopilot. You're not deciding whether or not to do something. I do not decide to get up at 6 a.m. I do not decide to skip dessert. I do not decide to wear my seatbelt. These are things that are just habits. I just do them without thinking. I don't reward myself for them, for instance. I don't reward myself for brushing my teeth because it's a habit. It's just something that's part of what I always expect of myself. And the fact is, decision-making is draining and difficult. So as much as we can eliminate decision-making, we're going to free ourselves and energize ourselves. And also, it takes self-control. If I'm deciding to wear a seatbelt, I have to tell myself, okay, Gretchen, put on your seatbelt. Okay, Gretchen, put on your gym shoes and go to the gym. And that exhausts me, using that self-control. So when a behavior goes on automatic pilot, where it just happens without decision, without self-control, then we lose that friction. And that's why habits can really serve us so well.
So you've written pretty much the definitive book on happiness. And in that book, you basically laid out what makes human beings happy. In a very real sense, this book is kind of a roadmap to achieve that happiness. And in Bill and Mark nomenclature, it's all about growing bolder. And before we let you go, Gretchen, in the final 60 seconds here, what have you learned about life? What have you learned in general about what you call happiness and habit formation and what Bill and I would call growing bolder? What makes it all work?
You know, I think at its core, it's this idea of knowing yourself. And, of course, that's the most ancient advice of all time. It's on the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. But we can only build a happy life on the foundation of our own nature, our own values, our own interests. We can shape our habits if we take into account what's true for us. We can grow bolder when we know what is it that we truly want. Because what we want might be very different from what somebody else wants. And it's only by knowing ourselves, accepting ourselves, and also expecting more from ourselves that we can build that bold, happy, healthy, energetic life that we all want.
So that's how you do it, folks. It's up to us. You can't lean on somebody else to make things happen for you. It's about standing up, expecting more from yourself, and wanting more out of yourself as well. I tell you what, Gretchen Rubin is a great place to start your journey forward. Check out her latest book, because it is a life changer. It's called Better Than Before: Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives. And it's so popular, this book is in 10 languages now. It's at retailers everywhere, and you can find out more about the book, and you can find out more about her as well by going to GretchenRubin.com. Great conversation.
Coming up, he embraced a diagnosis of incurable cancer and learned something that is helping others who are facing personal trials of all sorts. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Support for Growing Bolder provided by...
Even when we're growing bolder, we can all use a ride every now and then. Did you know that many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats like groceries and OTC medication? Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584.
This is Growing Bolder. I'm Bill Schaefer along with Mark Middleton, and it has been proven time and time again that attitude can matter when we're facing major challenges. Of course, being positive in difficult times, the hard part of that is it's not easy.
Yeah, this next story is a great example of that. When Stephen Hatcher was diagnosed with an incurable disease in the prime of his life, he was stunned. He was scared, understandably. But then he discovered a secret and found an incredible peace that not only changed his life, but is now helping others in their darkest hours. Steve Hatcher is a successful attorney, a man of faith with a corner office, an active athlete who is about to be blindsided.
I reach down, I pull the stump out, and I feel some right kind of in the middle of my back between my shoulder blades. And I thought, that's going to hurt tomorrow.
It did hurt tomorrow and the next day. When the pain didn't go away, Steve had an MRI. What he thought was a pulled muscle was multiple myeloma, a malignant tumor on his spine.
Cancer doesn't care. Doesn't care if you're a runner, doesn't care if you're a biker, a triathlete, just doesn't care.
The tumor was threatening Steve's ability to continue walking. Surgeons wanted it removed immediately.
The consequences of continued growth or a fracture of a vertebral body are potentially catastrophic. And so that requires attention first.
The night before the surgery, we got a call from my son, and they were on the way to the hospital for an emergency C-section. And our granddaughter was born about 3 weeks early, and we were supposed to be there to help with everything.
Their lives turned upside down in an instant. Multiple myeloma is incurable but treatable. After successful surgery to remove the tumor, Steve turned to Dr. William Groh and Florida Hospital to treat his cancer.
And I went through 16 rounds of chemo with Dr. Groh, coupled with 10 rounds of radiation in the midst of the chemo.
It was a physical challenge that Steve viewed as a spiritual opportunity, a trial that his faith had prepared him for.
Embrace the trial. Let the trial have an effect on you. See the trial as something that God has allowed to come into your life, because it is going to work, a work in your heart, in your character, that might not otherwise be possible.
Steve responded well to the chemo and radiation, but multiple myeloma has a history of returning, and to increase his odds of long-term survival, doctors recommended a stem cell transplant.
Which basically is a cleansing of your bone marrow with a gargantuan chemo hit that is intended to just get as deep and kill as much as it can.
That process took 3 weeks, during which time he was basically isolated in a small room. For many, a nightmare. For Steve Hatcher, an opportunity.
You know you're not going alone. You know God is going right with you. He promises you that. So let's go into this journey and let's see what he has to say.
As he listened, he wrote, turning his conversation with God into a personal journal and then weekly emails to family and friends.
I look forward to his emails as much as anybody else, because they were a source of strength for me, and they enabled me to kind of hang on.
His emails became social media, friends sharing with friends. Soon, nearly 300 people, most of whom he had never met, were on the list, and he began to hear from many, including ministers and pastors.
And he said, "I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to use some of these things on my sermons on Sunday mornings." People kept coming to me and saying, you know, the things that you're writing in your emails, they are impactful, and you really ought to find a way to get them in a book. And so I did. I got an editor and self-published a book and got it on Amazon, and probably 1,000 copies of it out there now, and you hear stories come back from people that it's helped.
Safe in the storm, the grace of God in the midst of cancer is now helping people not just with cancer, but any major life challenge.
I had one lady tell me that it helped her through her divorce. I had someone else tell me that it helped her through a financial breakdown, because the book is just about trials.
Steve's cancer has been in remission for 3 years. He's still on a daily regime of chemo and knows that his multiple myeloma could return.
And neither of us know what the future holds. Steve has a full working knowledge of that, too, that this could come back and we might have to intensify the treatment and it might get more challenging.
If it does return, he knows he's in good hands, not just spiritually, but medically with his team at Florida Hospital.
There wasn't a single person that I didn't feel really cared deeply. I would go back to that facility in a heartbeat. Would not have any reservations at all.
And what if he could somehow change the entire journey, snap his fingers, and never get the cancer diagnosis?
I wouldn't give it up. My communication with God so much stronger and deeper having gone through this, that I'll stay where I am. I just want to continue to tell the story and walk through the doors that are opened and see who I can help.
Like all of us, Stephen Hatcher has an uncertain future, but he also now has a deep peace from discovering that he's safe in the storm. And that's news worth sharing. You know, the one thing that is certain for all of us is that trials will come. That's just life. Stephen Hatcher embraced the trial and turned a very difficult experience into one of deep personal and spiritual growth.
You know, and thank goodness, Mark, he has the courage enough to share his story with anybody who needs that kind of encouragement. And if you'd like a video of his story, just go to growingbolder.com, search for his name, Stephen Hatcher, and you won't be sorry you did. You'll also find a link to learn more about his book, Safe in the Storm.
You know, you would think that having a great attitude would be easy when you're traveling, when you're on vacation, when you're having an adventure.
I think most of us know from experience, Mark, it is not. More trips have been ruined by bad attitudes than by lost luggage. Even travel expert Gary McHackney had to learn the hard way to take a deep breath and enjoy some of the unexpected journeys that can pop up when you're traveling.
Hi, I'm Gary McHackney, a former ad copywriter who decided to start Growing Bolder. Now I'm a best-selling, award-winning author, humorist, and America's backroad travel expert. Having covered tens of thousands of miles on my cross-country trips, I should have recalled John Steinbeck's observation. He said, "You don't take a trip, the trip takes you." I was in Cannon Beach, Oregon, and I had a self-imposed deadline to be in Florence, which was about 150 miles away by mid-afternoon. I was on my motorcycle, and on every mile along this coastal road, I kept stopping to take in sights of the Pacific Ocean. And then I'd start kicking myself for messing up my self-imposed schedule. And this feeling kept bugging me all the way down to a place called Tillamook. And a lady at the Chamber of Commerce, she said, "Well, take your time, go see the cheese factory next door." I wasn't interested in a stinking cheese factory. I was more interested in getting to Florence. But against my will, I dropped in the factory, and it was crazy. I was hooked. Not only did this stop remind me to let life unfold, it reminded me it was time for the trip to take me. So here's what I did. After seeing the cheese factory, I decided to add an extra 40 miles, and I explored this peninsula off of the coast. And from there, I stopped to see sights and photograph flowers and stop at lighthouses. I even dropped to see a cave filled with sea lions. So when you travel, you're living. Don't rush. Let it be.
And now Gary believes that his whole point in taking a trip is to take the road less traveled. We have other great travel tips from Gary at growingbolder.com.
Up next, the 70-something yoga and Pilates guru who has everyone talking. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton here. You're listening to Growing Bolder, and if you like Growing Bolder Radio, and come on, raise your hand if you don't, a reminder to check out Growing Bolder Television. And our next guest now, man, she's the poster girl for the benefits of staying active as we age. She's been involved with the ballet, with the yoga, Pilates, and more for over 65 years.
Yeah, she is now in her 70s, and she teaches yoga classes every day in Rancho Mirage, California. And now, thanks to a fabulous new series of DVDs, she is inspiring men and women worldwide, not only with her style and her technique, but with her graceful attitude on aging. Let's find out more as we welcome Janice Leonard. Hey, Janice, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. You know, yoga seems to be more popular than ever, and there has been some major longevity benefits because, you know, you're just a young lady compared to some of the instructors out there. I mean, we've had on this show yoganinis who are in their late 90s still teaching classes. What makes yoga such an ageless, such an age-defying activity?
Well, I think it's all a mind-body control or whatever you would call it, because really your mind becomes relaxed, which also relaxes the body, and you're stretching and, you know, meditating while you're doing your poses. So I think that kind of helps everything. You slow down. You're not, you know, running 50 miles an hour trying to do something. You're just taking your time, doing a daily workout, and make it easy for yourself so the body kind of just goes with the flow. That's a good way to say it.
Janice, are you just lucky? Are some people luckier than others? You know, I get up in the morning, my knees hurt, my back is sore, and my neck has got a crick in it. But you, we watch you, and you have embraced aging so well. Is it a question of just how you end up, what happens in life?
You know what? I think that is part of it. You know, you just take whatever is handed to you, and you try to make it good instead of dwelling on the bad stuff that might happen. And I think that's what I've done with my life. You know, there's always been something that maybe you would get angry about or whatever, but then you turn around and say, you know, what am I worried about? I'm alive. I'm living, and I'm living a fairly good life, and enjoy it. That's really what it is. Accept what you have and enjoy it.
You know, we're building a business on that very philosophy. And Janice, we get, just like you do, that, you know, some difficult things, some challenges, even some bad things occur when we age. But there is so much positive, so many opportunities. Since you do embrace aging, what do you like most about maturing? What have you found to be the most beneficial thing about actually getting older?
Well, for me, getting older, you kind of like think you know a lot more than you did when you were younger, and you tend to accept things that happen and just let it just slide off your back and enjoy your everyday things instead of, like I said, dwelling on negative things. You take all the good things because you're still here. You're still alive. You're still breathing, able to move, and enjoy everything you do every day.
You know, sometimes, Janice, people can look at you and say, well, sure, I mean, she's been doing this for decades. Fitness has been her lifestyle. And others just can't get off the couch to get going. I'm sure you've met so many people that are reluctant, who want to do it but can't. What do you say to them? How do you get somebody just to take that step?
Well, it's interesting because it was just yesterday. There was a gentleman who came to one of my classes last week for the first time, a yoga class. And he was telling me how sore he was after class. And he said, I had never done anything like that before, but I thought, you know what? I really enjoyed it, and I'm coming back. And he came back yesterday to class, and he said, thank you so much. I really enjoyed your class. And because he was older, he was probably, I think he was like in his late 60s, in his mid-60s. And he said, I really enjoyed doing this, and I'm going to try. I said, and that's all you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to push yourself to go beyond what you can do. You do what you can. And in my class, I always tell people, when you feel like you have gone as far as you're going to go, just relax, pull back, and then wait for the next part to come along and just relax the body. And basically, that's it.
You know, I did a little bit of research on Janice for this interview, and almost everybody that writes about her, that describes her, that
iron fist,
just the opposite. Everybody that sees her DVDs, that goes to her classes, describes her as a graceful, elegant, lovely woman who knows what she's doing. And folks, you should check it out. It really only takes about 30 seconds of watching one of her new DVDs to feel the same way. And let's get that plug in right now, because we believe in what she's doing. Her three DVDs, she's got one for Matt Pilates, another one for Ballet Bar, and a third for yoga. And Janice, these really are the opposite of those loud, frenetic workout videos that we see advertised on TV all the time. You obviously have gone in a different direction, right?
Correct. I have gone into a different direction. I like slow. I'm slow. I move slow. I take my time. And I think that's partly from my ballet, doing ballet as a child. And, you know, all through my life, I've done it. Not as a professional, but as just every day I did classes. And it really helped to calm the mind. And the music is beautiful in ballet instead of, you know, the frenetic music you get in most of the things. And try to relax the body. And everybody's running around and trying to push themselves so hard. And just sit down by yourself somewhere in a corner and relax and enjoy it.
Janice,
that's what I do.
Do you talk about your age? And how old are you these days? And how are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine. I'm 72. I'm headed a few months before. Well, let's see. I think I had 4 more months I'd been before I'm 73. So I'm doing fine. I am feeling well. You know, I've had little aches and pains just like everyone else. But I tend to just go with it. Just let it flow and just relax with the pain, and it works.
Folks, she is a great example, a wonderful role model for graceful, active, and healthy aging. She's not just a breath of fresh air, Bill. She is actually a yoga breath of fresh air.
You know, you watch and you feel like, and you know, it looks so easy, Mark, and she's right about that guy being sore. You try yoga and everyone knows it's tough stuff.
Check it out, folks. Look at her DVDs. And if you want to learn more about her, and you really should, take a look at the pictures of this woman and you'll see what we mean when we say elegant and graceful. Check them all out at Janice Leonard. That's L-E-N-N-A-R-D, JaniceLeonard.com. Coming up, you never have to stop doing what you love. At least so says the greatest rock climber of all time. You'll meet her next. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton here on Growing Boulder, and our next guest is a pioneer, Mark. She's a true icon in her sport, considered by many the greatest all-round rock climber who's ever lived. She not only made climbs thought to be impossible, but along the way, she smashed stereotypes, and she changed the perception of women in her sport.
Yeah, and perhaps the greatest example of that, Bill, was back in 1993 when she made the very first free ascent of the sheer nearly 3,000-foot rock face on El Capitan in Yosemite Valley, called the Nose. And really, for years, there was almost a pilgrimage to Yosemite by the best climbers in the world, hoping to achieve what was considered to be the unachievable. And not only was she the first to free climb the Nose in 1993, something that took her 4 days, she went back the very next year and did it again in less than 24 hours. And here's where the story really gets compelling. No one, not a man nor a woman, was able to repeat her successful climb for over 10 years. She was that far ahead of everybody else. Let's say hello and catch up with the legendary Lynn Hill. Lynn, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Well, you know what? We just love...
I was just going to say, as a matter of fact, this year marks not only the 60th anniversary of the first ascent done by Warren Harding, Wayne Mary, and Joe Fitchin, but it's also the 25th anniversary, if you think about the dates, 1993. So a lot of things have changed in the last 25 years, and I'm now 57 years old. I was about 33 when I did it the first time, and I'm going to go back and free climb it again with a young woman who's 31.
No way. When is that going to happen?
In less than a month.
That is exciting. So you are obviously working out right now. Before we talk about it in specifics, let's make sure everybody understands, including Mark and Bill, what we are talking about when we talk about free climbing, because you are without question bold, daring, ingenious, clever, strategic, but you are not crazy. In a successful free climb, there is a rope for protection, correct? But not assistance.
This is correct. It's a sort of a misnomer. When they hear free climbing, they think of free soloing, which means without a rope. And so that's not what we do. Rock climbing is what it should be called. It's the art of rock climbing. It's the sport that people practice when they go to the artificial climbing walls. They're not using their rope to get to the top of the wall. That would be pointless. The whole point is to climb up the wall because it's fun to climb. There's something innately satisfying to use your body in that way. So we're just adapting ourselves in terms of like hanging on with our fingers to the little edges, or if it's a crack, you get your hands and feet inside the crack. So it's a little bit like a ballet routine, and the rock itself is the choreographer.
Hmm. You know, Lynn, we listen to you describe that in our minds, and the picture in my head is one of sheer terror. How much of what you do is the adrenaline rush from just the fear, and how do you get over that?
Well, there's several stages when you're learning any kind of sport, particularly with climbing. Fear is one of the first places that most people start with. There are ways to start climbing that feel very secure and very safe, but even still, our irrational mind doesn't know that when you look down that you're not going to actually just fall. So you have to go through the teaching of, yes, I have a rope and I'm tied in, and you double check and triple check everything. You make sure that all the systems are safe and in place. And then even if you fall, you're not going to die. You're going to swing on the rope probably. If you're a leader, that's usually somebody that's had more experience, although I have to admit, my first day of climbing ever, way back in 1975 with my older sister, who was afraid to lead herself, showed me how to put all the stuff on, a harness and the knots, and gave me some shoes. And then she pointed up and said, you lead now. So most people don't lead their very first climb because the leader actually has to put in the protection as they go. And obviously you're climbing above your protection until you get to the next piece so you can fall down. And plus there's rope stretch, and if your belayer is not paying really close attention and has a big loop of slack, you'll fall even further. So it's very important to pay attention to all these safety features. But once you've been climbing for, you know, not even that long, it's all very simple. You know how to tie your knot. You put on your harness correctly. You know how to use the gear. And it's not actually as complicated as flying a plane or something like that. But the challenge, all, you know, after you get past that fear, lies in how you climb up the face. And on the nose, that was so sheer and so blank that people couldn't see how to hang on. And it took a very intricate sequencing and body positions and strength in order to do it.
And so let's talk about that, because El Cap was thought to be unclimbable by just about everyone. You were a young woman in a male-dominated sport. You had very few role models to inspire you to think that it was possible. And I'm guessing that there were many who quickly dismissed your attempt altogether. What led you to believe, Lynn, that you actually could do it when so many others, so many big names had tried and failed?
Because I've been around long enough in the sport to know that there's a certain attitude that I don't necessarily agree with that's not going to get in my way. I know what I'm capable of, and I had proved it time and time again. I was on the cutting edge even as a teenager. I was hanging out with people that were 8 years older than me, and I matured probably faster because of that, and I took responsibility for my own life pretty young. I went up to Yosemite when I was 17 years old and climbed Half Dome. I can't even believe my parents let me do that, but I'm one of seven kids, so I think being responsible for yourself was kind of necessary in a big family. And I was empowered by doing, and I think that that's the way life is. If you want to do something, just go after it, because you're never going to have what you think you need until you just get into it, and then you start learning, and then you know what you don't know, and then you start learning what you don't know. And it's the same in climbing. There's no rule book. It's just really an attitude.
That's a great answer, Lynn. And look what you accomplished just by following your passion. You helped not only open up the sport to women, you made it more popular all over the world. You proved that women are capable of climbing anything that a man can, and that's a powerful and important legacy that transcends your sport. So how do you feel about your place, not only in the history of climbing, but also in our culture?
Well, I think it's a very important aspect, and I'm proud that it's been effective, and I'm not alone in that. I think that once something like that starts, then there gets a lot of attention and people and energy around it. I'm not going to say U2 is exactly what I'm talking about, but look how popular the U2 movement got just over the last year or so. And, you know, for me, looking at a mainstream kind of concept like this, I'm thinking, what are people imagining that, I mean, these kinds of issues have been happening since the beginning of time. And now suddenly we're giving this special attention as though we didn't know it was happening. Of course. And this is how I viewed things as a little girl, is that, you know, why should the boys have all the privileges and why should they have, you know, the better deal and we get no power or money or anything? And just look at the history books. Look at third world countries, how women are treated. It's clear that it's not fair, and it's clear that it needs to change.
She is a remarkable person and a true inspiration, a powerful example that you never have to stop what you're doing, what you love, and we can all continue to find a way to say yes to adventure in our own lives. Folks, if you'd like to learn more about Lynn, her books, her courses, check out LynnHillClimbing.com. Thanks, Lynn.
Coming up, one of the most unusual guys you will ever meet, the four-time USA memory champion, mountaineer, and Alzheimer's disease activist. And there's a very touching and emotional story behind it all. Nelson Dellis is next on Growing Boulder.
Stay connected to Growing Boulder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures. Going to love this interview. He's a former software developer who was inspired to train his mind when his grandmother passed away from Alzheimer's disease. And to say this guy has been successful is like an understatement. In just 4.5 years, he transformed himself into one of the world's greatest professional memory athletes alive. And he's the four-time USA National Memory Champion.
Yeah, get this. In the 2014 National Championships, he broke his own record by recalling 310 digits in 5 minutes. And he set a new record memorizing 193 names in just 15 minutes. And here's what makes it cool. He does not have a photographic memory or any unusual powers. He is not the Rain Man. He does it the old-fashioned way. He trains 5 hours a day, and this is only part of his amazing story. Let's find out more as we welcome Mr. Nelson Dellis. Nelson, how are you today?
Hey, guys. I'm awesome. Thank you. How are you?
Great. We appreciate your time. Now, you train for hours every day. What kind of training is that? What does one do to develop the kind of recall capacity that you have?
Yeah, I mean, so I treat memorization like, you know, any skill that you might want to improve on. And I'm competing at this high level, so in these competitions, so I need to spend a lot of time on drills and different training exercises. And these relate to the actual events that happen at the competition. So whatever they have, there are different types of competitions. I'll do sets of, you know, memorizing cards or memorizing numbers, and I just do it over and over again until I get faster and more efficient at it.
How fast or efficient can the human mind be?
That's a good question. I mean, records are broken all the time in the sport of memory. And, you know, 20 years ago when these competitions popped up, the standards back then were really low, still impressive, but every year they just get higher and faster. And it's really tough to say when we'll reach a limit, if we will. I don't know.
You know what makes this story so fascinating, folks, is that it was his grandmother that inspired him to do this. Nelson, what was it about your relationship with your grandmother and her suffering from Alzheimer's that struck such a chord in you that you totally changed your life and you took on a challenge that to most of us would seem impossible?
Yeah, you know, she lived in France, and I was in the States, and so I'd only get to see her maybe once, maybe twice a year. Over the years that she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So when I would see her, it was always these drastic changes from the last time I saw her. And I think that probably played a bigger effect on me than anything because, you know, a year before she would forget things but was still kind of there. And then the next year, she didn't even know who I was. And just watching that was obviously heartbreaking, but also in a way fascinating, to see the brain kind of be capable of losing so much so quickly. And then when she passed away, that was really the first person that I was been close to that passed away. So I think the combination of those two things just made me really, really interested in memory and super motivated to not let the same thing happen to me down the road, you know?
And kind of, Nelson, you went the other way where she was losing hers. You were just exercising and gaining yours. I think one of the first USA yeah. Memory Championships you were in, you didn't even place. So you had to refocus. Yeah. It's not like it came naturally to you. So you refocused your energies on mountain climbing, another one of your passions. Yeah. And now you've combined the two by creating the nonprofit Climb for Memory organization. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so after training a lot of hours and figuring out what works with the brain in terms of memorizing and being sharp and all this this kind of brain cognition enhancement, I realized I needed to share that with people. I mean, the reason I started this was because of my grandma, and I wanted others to know that there are possibilities to improve your brain health and your memory. So I wanted to find a way to kind of create a voice for myself on a pretty big platform, as big as I could. And I love to climb mountains, and I figured what bigger way to do it than by climbing mountains and try to get people to check that out and be interested and fascinated with nature and the world, and at the same time learn a little bit about memory and Alzheimer's.
It's an amazing organization with an incredible mission, and it is so unique. And, you know, you've climbed some pretty big mountains, but you've not successfully reached the summit of the biggest of all. You've made two attempts to climb Mount Everest. You had bad equipment one time. You had bad weather the other. Nelson, did the tragic earthquake this year delay or change your plans on going back and trying for a third time?
Actually, I was planning to go back this year. But I had other kind of commitments that I needed to focus on, so I pushed it back to next year. I had a few friends who were out there and a lot of Sherpa from the communities there I knew, but thankfully all of them were okay. But, I mean, that whole area has just been hit so hard. It's really been quite sad to see. But I'm trying to go back there next year. You know, I think the best – a lot of people are saying we shouldn't climb there anymore, but I think – the best thing to do for that country, it relies so heavily on tourism and these expeditions that bring in millions and millions of dollars to the country. We just got to keep climbing, you know?
Well, Nelson, to give people an idea about your memory, I read somewhere that you can memorize like a full deck of shuffled cards in like a minute. I'm not really sure what that means, but I know that it's a lot better than I can do. Are there things, how good is your memory, in other words, and how can we start down the road so that I don't leave my keys somewhere and have to spend 20 minutes trying to find them?
Right. Yeah, so memorizing a deck of cards is actually one of the events they have at the competition. And I remember the first time I ever tried that with a technique that I had just read in a book took me 20 minutes, right? Which I thought at the time was awesome. But nowadays, yes, I broke the minute barrier, and actually my fastest time in competition is 40 seconds.
Oh.
But the world record even was just broken, I think, a week or two ago, and it's 20 seconds.
Tell us how that works, because I still don't get it. Do they lay out the entire deck in front of you, and you have to look at the order, and then they remove them? How does that work?
Yeah, so you get the deck of cards. It's shuffled. It's in a random order. You don't know. And you have a timer. And so when you lift up the deck to look at it, you can study it. That's the time that they give you. So when I say, you know, somebody memorized a deck of cards in 20 seconds, that means they looked at the order of the deck in their hands. You know, they went through it for 20 seconds and then placed the deck of cards away from them, and they had it in their mind memorized.
Unbelievable.
Following that. Yeah, then they take another deck of cards that's in, you know, it's a brand new deck, and you have to place it in the same order as the one you memorized. That's how they verify.
It's an amazing deal. Who knew there was such a thing other than you guys who do it? But I know he's going to change that, folks. He's very entrepreneurial. Nelson Dellis is starting the Extreme Memory tournament to try to take what he does to a larger audience. We're going to stay in touch with that. We'll share those details with you. But for now, folks, check out his website, because he is one of the most unusual men alive, someone who is proving the power of passion and persistence. His name is Nelson Dellis. You can learn more about the man and his mission at climbformemory.com. Nelson, thanks for your time.
Before we leave, have you heard about the free miracle treatment that slows or even reverses the effects of aging? A treatment that has been verified by hundreds of independent studies to be effective in combating age-related diseases.
Almost sounds too good to be true, but this free miracle treatment is called exercise. Research proves that exercise builds muscle even into our 90s, helps prevent weight gain, the loss of bone density, it relieves stress, and can dramatically reduce disease and dementia. Regular exercise is the free miracle treatment proven to slow the effects of aging, and it's an important part of growing bolder. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, blowing high and mighty traps. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. Proud neath heated brow. I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Older than, I'm younger than that now. Here a soldier stands.